Hello. Well, I guess we got cut off before. I'm not so sure what happened. That's never happened to me before in Classcaster, but I'm going to continue. So we talked about following cases. You follow the case law, but cases are distinguished on their facts. So not all tort cases are going to be treated the same. Not every broken leg is going to, there's going to be liability. What's distinguished is facts. Reason for making a difference is because facts are different. So in tort law, the facts become primary. In negligence, the outcome is variable. Not all situations have the same outcome. Same injury, same location, possibly a same outcome. And you have to distinguish that with absolute liability or strict liability. Our question here, since negligence depends on fault, our question is always going to be, when should an injury have been prevented? When are we going to allow a loss to be shifted from the injured party to the injuring party? There's a constant tension between negligence and strict liability. Negligence is liability of fault, strict liability, always liability. Negligence involves a risk assessment. Strict liability, you don't assess the risk, but you have to allocate the costs in some way. So just as a background, keep all of these distinctions in mind when we start to study negligence. Then we talked about the procedure of a torts lawsuit. And that's the fact that the plaintiff is the driving force here. The plaintiff is always moving forward. Defendant always tries to stop. Talked about motion to dismiss. You make that motion based on your contention that there's no valid law to support the case versus a motion for summary judgment. You make that motion when there's no issue of material fact. You're just saying, yes, yes, I agree with everything, and there's nothing to send it to the jury because the jury, there's nothing for the jury to decide. And both of those stop the case from going forward. Plaintiff can also make a motion for summary judgment saying, my case is so overwhelming, we don't need to send it to the jury, but plaintiffs rarely do that if there's so much overwhelming fact in favor of the plaintiff, they might just say, let's just keep going to the jury. So they have a jury decision. Plaintiff's always trying to get to the jury, defendant's always stopping it. Remember, the plaintiff has the burden of proof. So when we moved on to talk about our case, Christensen v. Swenson, keep all of these things in mind. The burden of proof, the idea of the judge being the trier of law and the jury being the trier of fact in order to determine how this case came about. Christensen v. Swenson is one of our two cases talking about vicarious liability. Vicarious liability just means responsibility for the torts committed by another. What we're saying here is the employer should be responsible for the torts committed by the employee, even though they had nothing to do with it. So Swenson got into an accident during the work hours. The plaintiff says, wants to say, respondeat superior. The employer is responsible. Question here, of course, was the issue of, was this work done during the scope of the employment? The theory of liability, of course, is respondeat superior. And in order to determine whether it's done in the scope of the employment, it's a question of fact. The jury gets to decide. The defendant here was able to successfully argue that there was no real question for the jury to decide. The facts were so obvious. It wasn't up until the Supreme Court of Utah that they decided that there were some facts in dispute and it should be sent to the jury. The law they were applying here was Berkner. Berkner had three prongs for deciding whether the tortfeasor was acting in the scope of employment, and as opposed to the lower court that thought that prong number two of this three-part test was pretty obvious and no jury could decide differently, Utah Supreme Court decided that even prong number two, a jury could decide this. So all three prongs could be decided by the jury. The court in Christensen v. Swenson then decided this should go to the jury. It was error by the lower court to grant the motion for summary judgment. I then gave you the hypothetical of Lewis the mailroom guy and his mail cart, and asked you to apply the three-part test of Berkner to Lewis and the mail cart. When you're asked to do these hypotheticals, don't rush into an answer. They're designed to get you to explore what the facts were in the case and how the facts may or may not have differed from the principal case. Here, Berkner had three prongs. Question whether this is more like Berkner or less like Berkner. Should it more like Christensen v. Swenson or less like Christensen v. Swenson in terms of applying the Berkner qualities? So all of the relevant facts that you should be concerned with, did Lewis have a regular lunch period? Did he have regular breaks? Were there rules against him getting coffee? No, but maybe he had regular breaks, so that getting coffee outside those breaks wasn't even considered a possibility. All of those things should have been, you should have thought of when you were doing the case of Lewis the mail guy. Anyway, so for the next class, we're going to continue on with the second case, the Roessler case, talking about vicarious liability, and then we'll go actually into further discussion of the cause of action of negligence itself.